three more from the archives. This is Mortain. You're listening to Mortain rambling on about books. Actually, I've only got two from the archives, and then I'm going to give you a spot review of a recently released book that I just finished reading, which was really tremendous. So the first review is for A Game of Thrones, which is book one of A Song of Ice and Fire by George R.R. Martin. And I listened to this as an audiobook unabridged, and it was read by Roy Dotrice, who is a tremendous reader, I must say. Synopsis. Ned Stark, Lord of Winterfell, becomes embroiled in a deadly political game with the king, the queen, their court, pretty much everyone. Meanwhile, his children lead interesting and very richly detailed lives, each having been gifted with a dire wolf. His bastard son John goes off to be a celibate knight of the watch, keeping guard over the Seven Kingdoms' northernmost border, the Wall. His daughters Sansa and Arya come to court with him. While Sansa is the perfect betrothed to King Robert's son Geoffrey, Arya is a tomboy who cannot be tamed, so there's nothing for it but to give her a sword and look the other way. The lives of his children, however, are mere shadows of the massive political game being played around them, and the cast of characters and factions is too vast and detailed to focus on. Opinion. The good. This book made me fall in love with the entire series. Martin has the kind of cast of characters that you'll find in a Melanie Ron series, but Martin has done more to make the political threads more prominent than the magical ones. Magic plays only a very small role in this world and is almost as mysterious to its inhabitants as it is to the readers. One profound strength is that Martin separates each chapter into the voice from whose point of view the chapter is told. This lends an immense amount of depth to the story. Every side, every faction, has their moment to speak. Everyone gets a chance to be sympathetic. Even the bad guys have motives that you can identify and say, yes, but they do this for a reason. There's no evil for evil's sake in this novel, although brutality and abuse do exist. The bad. If anything, I would have to criticize the multiple viewpoint characters as sometimes being a little confusing. Most of the time, the characters' voices are distinct. It's only because I read this as an audiobook that I could become confused here and there. I could probably also criticize the fact that this entire novel focuses on people with wealthy, powerful, aristocratic fathers, and the whole primogeniture and divine right of kings is very strongly reinforced. One almost hopes for a revolution so the little guy can be heard, but that's neither here nor there. There's very little ugly in this novel. I hear later ones can be frustrating, especially the fourth, because, at the time that I wrote this review, it was still being written and everyone was dying to read it. Grade, A-, highly recommended, a very well-written fantasy novel. I would actually, based on the rest of the series, I would probably upgrade that to an A. If you like the big political epics, it's a good series. Catch the Lightning by Catherine Acero. This is a book in the Saga of the Scolian Empire, and I read this as an audiobook. Synopsis. A girl from the L.A. barrio meets an unusual visitor from another time and space. He's part man, part machine, bound to a ship in a symbiotic pairing. They're drawn to each other psychically as well as physically. When he leaves Earth to return to the stars, she joins him for the adventure and romance of a lifetime. This one is part of Acero's Scolian Empire science fiction romance series. I have previously read The Quantum Rose. Opinion. The good. Steamy sex scenes. Seriously, the best part of this book is when Acero focuses on the physical attraction between Tina and Althor, which she writes in a way that made me blush and squirm. Very nicely done. Her science isn't too bad either. I'm not a physicist, so I can't say whether or not she's right, but I can say that as a science fiction reader, she was plausible enough for my taste. The bad. There were some difficulties with the sci-fi part of the novel, largely having to do with alternate reality Earths, that didn't make a whole lot of sense, and with physical teleportation from the psychic web. These sections were poorly explained and seemed to be barely concealed author devices to help the story along. The ugly. Romance novels often have some kind of forced entry scene where there's an implied lack of consensual activity, but sexual violence is usually either forgiven or secretly desired, or it's threatened but never acted upon, usually because the hero saves the heroine from the threat. The ugly part of this book is pretty damn ugly, I have to say. It was a problem in the Quantum Rose, and is even more so a problem here. Partway through the book, when Tina and Althor already have a loving, stable romance going, Tina is raped and Althor is tortured. The rape is not the gentle, not quite consensual sex that you find in bodice rippers. It's a violent, brutal act inflicted on our heroine by the villain of the story. What bothers me is that within days of this happening, after Tina has rescued Althor from his torture, she makes love to Althor, hoping the act will help heal him. Sorry, but what? What stunned me is that neither Tina nor Althor addressed the fact that Tina herself has been brutalized and violated in the most intimate ways possible. There's this immense wound there, and the story just glosses over it as if Tina's role were to help Althor solely, and her own pain is just not important, or not even real. As a woman and a survivor of sexual assault, all I can say is that Acero got it wrong. She did better in the Quantum Rose, but she completely failed here. It's not that I can't believe that Tina would survive the experience, or that she wouldn't be tough enough to overcome it. It's that she seems to have just skimmed right over it, focusing on everything else in the story at that point. When as a reader, I felt much more immediately the negative emotions that the rape scenes were designed to provoke. Basically, I didn't feel that, as a responsible writer, Acero should draw these powerful emotions out and then not resolve them, or at least address them. I believe that of her readers, the majority will have more of an emotional reaction to the rape scene than they will to the torture, since most of us have not experienced torture, while 1 in 5 women has been raped. Nor will they react to the intergalactical political turmoil, nor the escape from a space station scene. Basically, any other scene in the entire book will be more fantastical than the rape scenes, which were immediate, provoking, and very realistic. Great. B-. Strong recommendation, well written, with some flaws or predictability that makes it less fun to read. And now, without spoiling yet another book for you, and I will put a spoiler warning in the description of this one, of this audio pod. Audio... I don't know, what do we call these things? Pods? Anyway. I just finished reading Naomi Novik's book, His Majesty's Dragon. And this is the first in a three-book series. Everyone is reading this book, by the way. Right now, in the sci-fi and fantasy fandom world, I think... I went to a con a couple weeks ago, and this was the book that everyone was reading. It was awesome. So, I read it. It's magnificent. So picture Aragorn, right? That dragon series that recently came out a few years ago by Christopher Paolini, where a lot of people complain that it's very derivative, and a lot of times it seems like the focus of the novel is, gee, wouldn't it be cool to have a dragon? So Naomi Novik has taken kind of the same premise and said, well, maybe it wouldn't be so great. And not that having a dragon is a bad thing in this novel, but rather that it's a responsibility. It's a task. It's a duty. And in His Majesty's Dragon, this takes place during the Napoleonic Wars, and our protagonist in this book is a Navy captain who captures a dragon egg. And unfortunately, the dragon hatches while they're still at sea, and somebody has to take control of the dragon, or the dragon will go feral and no longer be able to help England. Since England captured the egg, they decide that they should get to have, you know, add this dragon to their aerial arsenal. Apparently, dragons as an aerial force are pretty common in this world. And so imagine the Napoleonic Wars with dragons. A lot of the terminology is drawn straight from World War I and World War II, where we had, you know, the very first air forces as well. So there's kind of a lot of aerial combat terms come from a later period, but they're being used here in a way that doesn't seem strange. Most of the cultural things that you encounter after about page 30 or so, most of the cultural things are things that are not strange because it's a fantasy novel, but they're things that are strange because it's set in, you know, a different time period rather than a different world entirely. So culturally it's good. I actually really enjoyed this because one of my big complaints about fantasy novels is that a lot of times they are coming of age stories in one way or another. And one of the big tropes that I find in fantasy that irritates the hell out of me now that I'm 30 years old, 31 years old, is that you'll have a hero. The hero will will come into his powers, whatever they are, the non-normal powers. He will come into them right about the time where he's going through puberty. And I don't know about you, but when I went through puberty, I didn't know anything. And I was very awkward and confused and made a lot of mistakes. And I think that if people came into magical powers at the same time that they hit puberty, there would be a lot of dead teenagers, because teenagers can be extremely self-destructive. And if you added to that, their, you know, a magical power and ability, when you don't really have the capability to control that and be responsible for it, I think it's an unrealistic way for talents to develop. And in this novel, the majority of people who get a dragon get it when they're in their teens. They get bound to this dragon when they're, you know, 12 to 14 years old, right in there. And our hero, he's an established, experienced sea captain. He's right about 30 or so. And he had other plans for his life. And now he is a dragon rider, and he's going to do that instead. And he's thrown back into being a schoolboy. Very, very well done, the way that she deals with all the issues that come up with that. You know, the personal issues of, wow, I've got a dragon. My life has completely changed. Right about the point in your life where you're thinking, I can now make changes to my life that are driven by me and not by forces outside of me. It's just incredibly well done, and I love that. I just sink my teeth into that kind of story, and so that was something that I give enormous kudos to Ms. Novak. I also give kudos to the fact that it's a well-written novel. You don't usually get to see a first novel, that is as well-written as this. It's just, the story comes out. It comes out well. It's well-described. It's just beautifully done. Beautifully done. I would definitely give this one an A+. I'm not going to ramble on. Well, okay, I have rambled on, so too bad. But I won't ramble on too much further, just to say it's definitely one to read. If you are a fantasy novel reader, this is a great one. The other two books in the series, Throne of Jade and Black Powder War, are already out, so you won't be sitting around waiting for 3 years while the author finishes the next book. You may be waiting after Black Powder War, but at least the initial series, the initial trilogy, is out there. So, anyway, strong recommendation. A+. Very, very good read. Hope you've enjoyed this installment of Mortain's rambling about books. And I, you know, if you have any comments or book recommendations, drop me a line. Just go to bookramble.blogspot.com and post a comment. Let me know what's going on. One of the cool things that I've been doing lately is I've been reading a lot more, because my husband and I have set aside Monday nights as reading night. There's nothing good on TV on Monday night anyway, so we just pull up and close the television set and pull up some books. Santa Cruz, do you remember when you were a kid and there was that library book reading program in the summer, and you'd go to the library with the books you'd read that week, and they'd put a card up on the wall, and you got to talk about your books and everything, and at the end of the summer you'd get a prize based on how many books you read that summer? Well, Santa Cruz has the same, which is where I live, Santa Cruz, California, has the same program. They have, you know, the library summer reading program. They have one for kids, and they have one for adults. So every Sunday now, I go down to the library, and I sit around with a bunch of other people who have read books that week, and we talk about what we read. It's really cool. Plus, we get to, you know, have the little cards that go up on the wall and in the library. And, you know, I realize that children need to be encouraged to read. There's absolutely no doubt about that in my mind. But it's really nice to have the same fun with reading when you're an adult. Adults will read for the sake of reading and will enjoy that, but to have sort of the same, I don't know, the same goodie bag, so to speak, it's quite an incentive and quite fun. So, two things I wanted to talk about today, and I hope you have a great summer. Read some books.